It's the Adult in the Room podcast with Victoria Taft. That's me. In praise of minding your own business. Right after the Kyle Rittenhouse verdict was read, acquitting the 18-year-old of all the charges and upholding his right to invoke his self-defense privilege, his attorney, Mark Richards, made a statement that has stayed with me since last November. It's a statement that's not necessarily about the case. It's really a throwback. I mean, it's something we used to say on the playground. It was valuable guidance. See if you can spot it.
He had as much business being there as any of the demonstrators or the rioters. That's all I can say. I mean, there's going to be people who will never agree with that statement. But, you know, if we all would just mind our own business a little bit, I think we'd all be better off. And that's a hard lesson to learn, but...
I'm sure you caught that. I think what Richard was saying, that if Rittenhouse would have been allowed to run to the cops, which he'd already told them, if they'd minded their own business instead of trying to stop him and beating him up, which they did within feet of the police, the story would have had a different ending. They literally stopped him from going to the police so they could get their licks in. Eventually, he did get to the cops after two of those people beating him had been shot. You know, on the playground, we had an acronym for minding our own business, and it usually came with the girls putting their hands on their hips going, M-Y-O-B. It's when you put your nose into someone else's business when it ain't none your business. People are beginning to appreciate again the notion of minding their own business, not turning away at someone who needs help, obviously, but keeping your nose out when people are just trying to live their lives, and it certainly doesn't have impact on yours. I mean, I think COVID has heightened the call for people to mind other people's business. Take, for example, going into a hardware store as I did for maybe, I mean, it was like 4 minutes, 5 minutes, maybe, to get some Drano. This was in 2020. I walked in, grabbed some of the stuff I needed, and then, oh no, I went, I forgot the Drano. So I left that at the cashier, went to get the Drano, and then somebody said, hey, she's not wearing a mask. And before I knew it, there were 6 to 9 people surrounding me. Some, most of them were clerks and others who were customers whom I just smiled at and, you know, passed. And I couldn't wear a mask that day. But like this pack of jackals, they circled me and kept me in the store for a longer period of time than I needed to be there. Furthermore, one woman clerk put her hands on me, pushing me back, screeching that I needed to get out. I mean, I was in shock at these people arrayed around me who knew me as a customer. I came in all the time. And I had just seen a guy at the checkout counter. We'd smile at each other. And he came back to call me a Karen. I think he totally missed the point of what that's all about. And I was afraid I'd be physically assaulted if I pulled out my phone to record these people. I am totally serious about that. And this was when there was the suggestion, when we were all buying the bogus stuff about keeping 6 feet distance. They got closer to me. They were all wearing masks so that they could get closer to me without wearing a mask, trying to kick me out because I wasn't wearing a mask, because that put them in danger somehow. Because why? If they had just helped me, if they had allowed me just to, I begged them, can I just reach and get the Drano, please? No, they wouldn't let me. They wouldn't help me. They didn't do any of that. Instead, they ramped up the hate based on their belief that it was their personal business to make sure I was wearing a mask. They kept me in the store for longer than necessary, pretending to be afraid of me when they weren't. I wasn't sick, but they sure were. And it made me stop and think about what our obligations are. If someone's in danger, we should help. Those people weren't in danger. They were drunk with power. Someone had green-lighted this kind of treatment against people. They had approved this intrusion. What are we teaching people? You know, making the rounds in Canada right now, in the United States, obviously, since I've seen it, is a video of a little boy being questioned with a group of kids about what should be done to people who are unvaccinated. It's in Quebec, so it's in French. He proudly told the TV questioner, well, we should call the police.
Puis qu'est-ce qu'on devrait faire avec les gens qui veulent pas se faire vacciner?
On devrait appeler la police.
Ooh, oui, oui, oui.
Oui, oui. They were so pleased with his answers. Why is it any of this kid's business? Why is it their business? With what we know about the latest variant, both vaxxed and unvaxxed are getting it. He didn't demand to see people's papers when people walked around who may have had the cold or flu. I mean, honestly, what are we teaching people? Now, I appreciate the new DuckDuckGo commercials. Have you seen these? The search engine that doesn't sell your information. And it touches on what's their business.
Your life, your hopes, your passions. These things are none of our business. Your deodorant rash, your favorite cheese, and whatever you were searching for at 1:15 a.m., that's really none of our business. Because your life is private, and unlike other tech companies, we think your internet should be too. Oh, what kind of talk is that? Oh, that's none of our business either. Protect your privacy online for free with DuckDuckGo.
I like it a lot. I like that sentiment. I think we should do more of that. I'm just woodshedding these ideas. There are plenty other things I could add here, but I just want to kick them around with you a minute. But there is something disturbing about a huge number of people who think your business is theirs. I came across this song by Hank Williams Sr. I think you'll appreciate it.
There's a little masterpiece of nonsense I wrote here a couple of years ago, 3 years ago.
That suits me.
A lot of folks request this for other folks. Nobody hardly ever requests it for themselves. Thank you. Here it is. If you mind your business, you won't have time to be fooling around with mine. Huh? Let's go.
If the wife and I are fussing, brother, that's all right. Cause me and that sweet woman's got a license to fight. Why don't you mind your own business? Mind your own business. Cause if you mind your business, then you won't be minding mine. Oh, the woman on a party line's a nosy thing. She picks up her receiver when she knows it's my ring. Why don't she mind her own business? Mind your own business. Well, if you mind your business, then you won't be minding mine. All right, Don.
Boundaries, people. Boundaries. Okay, stick around for my talk with Red State's Jen Van Laar on the Adult in the Room podcast. Jen Van Laar is the managing editor of Red State. She's a podcaster when she has time, produces valuable content that you should read, and that's why we're talking about some of her recent reporting. Jen, welcome back to the Adult in the Room podcast.
I am so excited to be here. Thank you.
Thank you for coming. I know you're very busy. You've got all kinds of things going on in your professional as well as private life, and I appreciate you spending a few minutes with me today, which are not going to be a few minutes, are going to be probably several. Now, let's start with something that is it's actually gaining national attention, and it's the murder of Breonna Kupfer. And she is the grad student murdered in a furniture store when she was working there by a so-called homeless drifter who's got a rap sheet longer than a CVS receipt, and how L.A. officials are pretending not to see anything here. And Jen, you've been doing some reporting about this. Tell me what local officials have done to set up for something like this.
This has been at least a decade in the making, unfortunately. Yeah. And especially the last 5 years, I've been reading a lot about the particulars in the past few days because I want to slam the LAPD chief for some of his comments. And when I do that, I like to have all of the facts behind me. So in 2015, even though the rest of the country didn't really see a big uptick in homelessness, Los Angeles did. And it's been just exponentially growing since then. So to just give you a sense of it, there was another murder in LA that same day by a homeless person over by Union Station in downtown. And I used to take the train down there a lot in the 2019 timeframe. And there were streets there that maybe had a tent or two on them. Now those streets have two rows of tents up and down them. with people hitting, when they're tapping into the electrical.
Oh, yeah.
They have, like, refrigerators out there tapped into the power poles. I'm serious. Dishwashers.
Oh, I've seen that.
Washing machines.
What? Really?
I'm serious. Yes. And so they're using power and not even paying for it because they're just tapping right into the power pole. And no one does a damn thing. Sorry, I hope I can say that word on your podcast.
You may.
So, yeah, when you have conditions like that, and then you have where we don't have enough mental health resources, that's 100% true. And then you have where the district attorney, and that's only been since 2020, though, that he just lets people out on cash bail to the point where, and he even has said the day that he was inaugurated, I am not prosecuting misdemeanors, period. So you can't arrest someone for trespassing, loitering, any of that stuff. You can, but they're just going to turn around and be right back out. So that gets to the point where the cops are like, well, my job is to, you know, bust criminals. And if nothing's going to happen, why am I going to waste my time with the citation?
Mm-hmm.
So they just ignore it. So that's kind of like your whole perfect storm building up.
I know Tucker Carlson undertook this issue the other day and, of course, referred to the Idaho law that doesn't allow certain things to be done with people who are on the streets, and they should make every effort to get them a home or at least provide them shelter. And after you've done that, you still have a plethora of people sitting on the street who are just, it's the old smoke your rent, live in a tent. And that's the overarching ideology by these people. This is their raison d'etre. They are there because they can be, and nobody's going to do anything about it, and they don't have to pay rent. And they've got, apparently, their washing machine hooked up to local power poles without having to spend any money. It is astonishing.
It really is. I even saw a toilet out at one, and this is actually over near LAX, so not in an area where you normally would see these encampments. So a friend was driving me to the airport around Christmas time, and I was standing there or sitting in her car with my jaw just dropped. What? That's really a toilet sitting right there. Tell me that's not a toilet.
One time we were driving, and Portland's got a terrible problem, too, because they don't want to. They have a 10-year plan to end homelessness there, as does every, I think, major West Coast city. And we're going into year 15 of this, and you're not going to believe this, but there are still a lot more people on the streets of Portland than ever before. And there was a guy on the side of a freeway, had a little encampment there, and he had his weight set there. Do a little workout there.
It's scary, though, because, like, you know, in prison, they go work out in prison and come back buff or whatever. And mm-hmm. They're at least in prison when they're working out, they can't go hurt people. It's like, what are you working out so you can go be more effective at mugging people?
Yeah. Yeah. I know that there has been a lot of talk about this issue of homelessness, especially in I can't remember the guy's name. It was just written the book of San Francisco.
Schellenberger.
Thank you.
Schellenberg? Something like that.
Yeah. Anyway, interesting guy. But he's a little late on it, only because I've been going up to San Francisco down, as the case may be. And at the times I've gone up there, it's been from Southern California. But up to San Francisco to help minister to people who are homeless. And I have to say, uh-huh. just my personal observation in the Tenderloin is that since the advent of fentanyl in such huge amounts, the people you see on the street don't look homeless or groggy anymore. They actually look like they're dead. And mm-hmm. they've done, and of course, they've tried as best they can to clean up the streets around there and to make sure that the people are off the street as much as possible and warehoused in these micro apartments where they can continue to abuse drugs and never get any help. It's not helpful at all.
Not at all. And that's the thing with Los Angeles. So Mike Bonin, who is actually Brianna Kupfer's city councilman, is a homeless advocate, or he doesn't even like the word homeless, of the unhoused. And I wrote about it, Red State, how his office actually called LAPD over one vagrant sleeping outside of their office that made the people uncomfortable. And mm-hmm. so they wanted him taken away for trespassing, you know, just one guy though. But they say, well, we need to have treatment. We need to have these things. We need to have housing. Well, in California, they passed a law back in 2019, and LA, San Diego, and San Francisco could be the pilot cities. Okay. And it was where they allowed... Yeah. Well, they actually, I mean, it was a good thing, except that none of the three cities want to do it because it actually might work. It would have an extended period of time in which people that were deemed incompetent, so mentally ill or sick that they were not competent to handle their affairs, a longer time of involuntary commitment than the 72 hours that you might normally get. And it added that they could be disabled basically from alcoholism or mental health stuff or drug addiction. And I'm thinking, great, great, this is great. Get some of these people. You need to get them clean for more than 72 hours before you can start making a change. And of course, LA, San Francisco, and San Diego, all of the homeless advocates are like, no, that takes their civil liberties away. We can't do that. People, just because someone drinks doesn't mean they're incompetent. And then you put them in these places and they can't even have visitors. And they can't, you know, bring alcohol in there. Like, no, because we're trying to get them clean. I mean, what?
Yeah.
So those, they all declined to be part of that. But then you have clowns like Chief Moore, LAPD Chief Michael Moore, out there. See this guy that, like, punched a woman in the head, 70-year-old woman in the head. She knocked, fell down, died of a skull fracture. Ugh. And the police found him 90 minutes later just sleeping right there, like, nothing happened. He says that it was a failure of our mental health system. But yet they don't take the things that we're trying, that the lawmakers are trying to give them to help it.
Yeah. California also had a law in the past few years, because I noticed when I was working with the homeless in Southern California that it was immediately felt. And it was that they no longer had to do anything to clean themselves up, go to meetings, nothing at all. To get housing. And as you say, this pilot program, which would revert the state back to the way it used to be without the, I mean, they didn't have the, you know, the fact that they might be locked up as a result, but they did have the fact that they had to seek help, get clean and that sort of thing. And, you know, that MAPS program that they've talked about, which would help people get off drugs, sounds like a really worthy goal and maybe something that the housing people in San Francisco and L.A. and San Diego could undertake so that you know, you don't have a hot and cold and running bums on the sidewalk. And they're bums. They're damn bums.
Mm-hmm.
You know, right. When you're there predating
maybe
on old ladies.
Maybe they didn't start that way. Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Okay, so poor Breonna Kupfer, she could have lived had that person been put away, the bad guy who'd been arrested a couple of times in Southern California, who'd come from the Carolinas with, as I say, a rap sheet as long as a CVS receipt. I mean, this guy was just really bad news. Do you know anything more about this guy?
I mean, just that I've read from his criminal record in both North and South Carolina, and I know from having worked in the criminal justice system in North Carolina for about 20 years, they're pretty serious about bond and about the person not leaving the state when they're on bond. And I'd imagine South Carolina is the same. So I would be very curious to find out what happened when this guy was arrested in 2020 in LA. It was a misdemeanor. So I don't know if they even ran his name through the nationwide database to see that there was this warrant there or this bond. Because if they saw this bond and these charges, they'd be like, okay, why are you in California? Then you're not supposed to be here. And should have had conversation with the other state then.
Would they have
so
ever?
That could have prevented all this.
Yeah, exactly. Would they have done that, though, do you think? I mean, considering that they're so
it
easy
depends.
On these guys.
Right. That's what I'm thinking. If it was a misdemeanor thing, which it looks like it was, and this was even before Gascon, he was arrested in October of 2020.
Can you even get a gun in California anymore?
Yeah. Well, I'm in Ventura County, so we're a lot more normal.
That's right. Now, that's the place to be.
We've got Alicia Krauss coming out to speak at my Republican Women thing tomorrow. And she's like, do I need a vax card? Or I'm like, no, you don't even need a mask.
Oh, that's great.
I mean, technically you do, but nobody enforces it.
That's awesome. I mean, I wish her well. I hope she's doing well. That's awesome.
She is.
Yeah, I used to. Whenever we'd, I'd fill in on KRLA. Sometimes she'd be there. Sometimes she wouldn't. Sometimes Ben would be there. It's been a while. Yeah. Yeah, so it's been a while. Well, anyway, you've done some amazing work on the big effort by big tech, I think, Google and Spotify specifically, to rewrite the laws on copyright without going through Congress. And Could you give us the backstory on that? Because that is a remarkable series of reporting you did over at Red State. And that's something that we should really, really, really be watching out for.
Thank you. Yeah. And I started out as a blogger in this industry 10 years ago, a little over 10 years ago. And coming up through that, you know, you're very cognizant of people kind of stealing your work. And any writer, I'm sure, is. And musicians and everyone else. And what was fascinating to me about this story is that it so closely mirrored what's happened in criminal justice reform, with air quotes reform, what's happened with CRT and Black Lives Matter and all of these other areas where they can't, and even gun control. I think this pattern really we saw with every town, that they see the liberals see something that they can't get through Congress legislatively, and they're not going to get a popular opinion from people for, like, obviously gun control wasn't going to be something that they could get through, or saying, hey, you know what, we want to not pay musicians for their songs, we just want to stream them on Spotify. That's cool, right? People, like, most thinking people be like, no, that musician made that, it's not cool to not pay them. So instead of going, you know, the way of transparency, they create these think tanks, and then they do this research but it's all done by people who already have an outcome in mind and what the talking points are supposed to be. And then they get these scholarly works, and then they create white papers from that, and then they try to just go through, see, the research says that we have to do it this way.
It's that cycle that they did with Russian collusion.
Yes. And then even like we were talking about with Breonna Kupfer, one of the reasons that George Gascon got elected was he's like, well, this research shows that incarceration doesn't show blah, blah, blah. And you throw in all these big words in there and buzzwords. And then people are thinking, oh, wow, they've really got the science trademarked.
Yes. And they wrote it. They wrote them. The science.
Yes. Yes. So that's sort of what's happening there. But what makes it worse is, and I didn't even like I said before, I've been in the legal industry my entire career in some form or another. I've never heard of this organization, the American Law Institute. And they create basically what's known as these Cliff's Notes for various areas of law. So a judge could sit there and go, okay, I've got this copyright case, and there's different case law from different jurisdictions that these parties are arguing to me. So I just need something authoritative that I can look at, like people refer to Black's Law Dictionary sometimes, mm-hmm. something like that. Well, that's what this group puts out. They call restatements, and they usually do it on things that are not already in a federal statute where we have basically plain law, like copyright. They might do it in other areas. And then these are basically taken as just gold. That's the, like, if it says it in this restatement that this is the black letter law, then these judges follow it unquestioningly. So they're doing one on copyright now, but all of the legal scholars that are working on it are tied to Google or Spotify in some way.
So they're paying for the research. They're paying for this. Do they get side gigs from Google and Spotify just to do other things? Is that why they're on their radar? I mean, because remember when Napster was put out of business? Isn't Spotify just Napster, kind of, almost, sort of?
There is, and there's even some speculation that it was the ripped audio files from Napster that started Spotify.
Wow! I
found that. I couldn't find a good way to wrap that into what I was writing the other day. Uh-huh. And obviously Spotify was going after the guy that wrote that in a book. But that was very interesting aside. Wow. And given how Spotify's behaved, like this guy that's leading this copyright restatement, he actually was a lawyer for Spotify in a case about streaming music royalties. And their argument, get this, was that we're not duplicating and distributing this music. We're just streaming it. So we don't owe these people royalties at all.
Wow. You know, I mean, I think people need to appreciate, listeners to this program probably do fully appreciate the fact that Google and obviously Spotify are trying to hoover up as much content as possible in as cheaply as possible. And so that they never have to actually pay to use this information and then distribute it and then use you as the end user as their product, actually, getting all of your information, et cetera, et cetera. And my guess is that if anybody ever did come and try to litigate this, it would be the end user who'd probably be a named defendant.
Right. And that's exactly right. And then YouTube, like, that it's their product that they're giving to us is the content. And like any corporation, they want to get that content as cheaply as possible or free.
Mm-hmm.
And then make money. But yet then on the other end, they're going to go after the little guys that might upload something that offends someone like Disney or something else that YouTube needs to be in the good graces of.
Mm-hmm.
Like last year, I was watching that Jungle Cruise movie that came out. And my granddaughter was like 3 months old at the time and was there with her parents and just chill Friday night watching it. And she was asleep on my shoulder and just making the cutest faces. So I was taking a little video of her asleep. And you could hear maybe 30 seconds of dialogue in the background.
Uh-huh.
No joke, within a half hour after I put that on my Facebook page, it was showing that there was a copyright challenge from Disney and they needed to silence it.
Wow.
And I challenged it. I'm like, dude, it's a video of my granddaughter sleeping. I'm not trying to show people the Jungle Cruise.
Wow.
And they restated it.
Wow. So the people need to understand that this is a way, this restatement by these guys who are apparently in the enthrall of Google and Spotify, their attorneys and doing work for them and receiving funds from them, to restate the law so that these large behemoths, big tech behemoths, can hoover up the information and not have to pay for it. That's a big thing. But how does that... Now, I'm sure people would go, well, that's great. You know, I'd get all this free stuff. That'd be super. What's the problem, Victoria and Jen? What's the big deal? But ultimately, that means that they could just hoover up your information, too.
Right. And one of the things... These lawyers argue that all of this... access to information for free somehow spurs innovation, but I'm more of the mindset that why would you innovate, especially someone who's a creative,
mm-hmm.
as I've grudgingly finally realized I'm a creative, why would they spend time making work if they don't know that they're going to be financially compensated for it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Why would you do that?
Why would you do that? Yeah. So in other words, it would stifle it.
That's how I see it. I mean, at least for some period of time. I mean, 200 years from now, am I going to need royalties? No. But I think there is a good argument for a time frame for things to be in the public domain.
Mm-hmm.
But that's
which
not
exists currently.
Immediately.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's not immediately.
Your work product, your creative product, your writing and that sort of thing. Red State, for example, would not be able to put up a huge fight if they came and subsumed all your information. And so by extension, I think you would be hurt by that as well.
I'm already hurt. And our writers at Red State are hurt every day by how things are currently with just the massive piracy, because I'm salaried, I don't mind sharing. So I don't get paid by the click, but all of my writers do. So say, and I've been in the past when I was with Red State, I've worked for clicks. Basically you get paid a certain percentage of each, or a certain amount for each click that your story gets. So for instance, when I wrote the Katie Hill story, I got paid per click, which I still got a ton of clicks.
Yeah. You got killed. But, you killed it on that story.
Yeah. But then again, there's so many little blogs or sites that what they do is they just scrape the content from Red State, from PJ Media, from other places and put it fully on their site it might even say by Victoria Taft on their site, even though you have nothing to do with it. And they will put your entire work, the Katie Hill story, not only did I endure death threats and I got my latest legal bill is $165,000 that I just got yesterday. But also all of the time that I put into it before it was published, there was weeks of work just on that one story. And then these people there could have been 10 sites with all of that and they have ads on there. So people click there. I'm not seeing a damn thing from any of that.
That's true. That is true. Yeah. My stories end up on
other
places.
And Red State and Town Hall goes off. Yeah. Like our corporate office does contact these people, but a lot of times it's people that aren't even in the United States running these sites, and there's nothing that we can do about it.
Now, on back to the copyright thing in terms of your story. Now, Ron Coleman, he's an attorney with, why am I just...
Harmeet Dillon.
Why am I just blanking on that? So have you talked to him about this? Is this something that they're looking at?
I haven't talked to him about this story. He's always, so Harmeet Dillon, full disclosure, is my attorney on the Katie Hill case and now just in general for whatever things I work on. But I have not talked to him about this case, but I think it's something that's definitely on their radar.
I mean, he's the man. I mean, he did the Slants case. So he's, I mean, IP and copyright and that sort of, that's up his alley. That's his specialty. And he won that case. So, I mean, it would seem to me that I hope that it's on his radar.
I did see him retweet it. And I have gotten some emails from people that I had quoted in the stories, some like a music blogger and then actually an attorney that argued against this Christopher Sprigman, who is the Google and Spotify guy, and won cases against that guy. He won the case, the Spotify case, where they actually did have to pay royalties. And both of those guys were pretty complimentary about the series.
Yeah. Oh, you did such intricate work there. You do talk about the projects on which these attorneys work and how they previously did it for Spotify and Google. And now they're literally rewriting the law to accommodate because judges use that restatement book, the little cheat notes, they use that to rely upon that as the state of play in the state of the law. And as you say, the black letter of the law, and they're restating it and they're wrong. So they're they're literally rewriting it. The copyright law, black letter law, is suddenly being written in invisible ink and then replaced by this stuff.
Yeah. And even some of the advisors that ALI named to be advisors on this project, who are all, from what I've looked into, you have to be invited to be part of this club. You can't just apply. Someone who's already a member has to invite you. And they're distinguished legal professors. So some of these advisors, I think there were 10 of them, 7 or 10, came out in a letter to ALI saying, they're saying what it is. Like, they're coming out and making errors in this. So I think it's pretty terrible when you have people involved in the project saying, there's a couple activists hijacking this and they're not listening to us when we tell them they're wrong.
And I'm not surprised whatsoever that there are a couple of activists who have hijacked the process. I used to think that the law reviews and those kinds of entities were the people who stated what the law is and was. But I've never even heard of this organization until now. That's just astonishing. Well, let's go to Ted Lieu, because that's my favorite story recently that you've done. I mean, the copyright thing, is, of course, I'm just...
He's such a tool.
He really is. Now, Ted Lieu, he's a congressman from the L.A. area in California, and he's the backup to Adam Schiff, who himself was the backup to Anthony Weiner before he fell from grace. And they are the designated pit bulls for the Democrats on all matter of narratives, such as the fraudulent Trump Russia hoax and other things. But recently you caught Ted Lieu. Please tell us about it.
Well, he basically, the thumbnail is, he just called out sick, played hooky from voting in Congress to take his wife, kids, brother, and parents on a luxury cruise to Bermuda.
That's so awesome. I mean, good for him. I'm very happy he was able to take a luxury cruise to Bermuda, but he missed a big vote. Or did he?
Well, yeah. If you just look at the roll call, so this was back in Thanksgiving timeframe. So Wednesday before Thanksgiving, he sent a letter to the clerk saying, pursuant to this House resolution, I'm designating a proxy to cast my vote. And then he says, I'm unable to physically attend proceedings in the House chamber due to the ongoing public health emergency. So then he takes off for New York City and does his cruise for the week of Thanksgiving. And if you remember, that Thursday and Friday before Thanksgiving was when Kevin McCarthy was up pretty much all night long on the House floor arguing against Build Back Better, and then the House passed it.
Yeah, and here's the dirty little secret. Because of COVID, the congressional representatives can stay home and have someone vote as their proxy. And indeed, they have been using those proxy votes as a way to say, oh, we have a quorum. So they're not even there for quorum. They're there, and then they vote from Bermuda.
Right. So if you look on the House website for that roll call vote, it just, there's even not even an asterisk next to his name. It just says yay. And then then there's a link to, okay, people who voted by proxy. Then you click on that, and there had to have been 30 Democrats that voted yay by proxy, if not more. And if they, and someone pointed out to me, and I haven't been able to find the actual text to back this up, but said, they said that if they were lying, basically, in that letter, then their vote wouldn't count. Ooh. So it got me thinking, I wonder how many votes shouldn't count, not just from Ted Lieu, but from other Democrats or even Republicans during this. And I want to go back if I had time and look at all of these votes and see how many things would not have passed if they had to actually show up for work.
It's the same thing what they did with the elections laws during the 2020 election. Same kind of thing where we're going to change everything and it will result in what we want to have happen. But we're just shaving off a few things here and requirements there. Who needs a signature match? Hey, ID, ID, you know, who cares about ID? I mean, all kinds of things.
But you better be able to prove that you have an ID when you have your vax card to get into Staples Center in L.A. because they check it. Somehow everyone can figure out how to have one there.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right. Well, Jen, I know one more thing I wanted to get your take on because you did a bunch of stories on the Wuhan Institute of Virology, as well as DARPA. And it was sort of playing off of what James O'Keefe's reporting was, in which they found out that, oh, you know what? This was gain of function research. And you take it away because I'm sure I'll muddle it up.
Oh, that's a complex one. But basically, what we're finding is that DARPA and NIH have funded Wuhan and what's his name? Peter Daszak. For so long that we paid for all of the technology building up to COVID-19 and, you know, along with Wuhan.
Yeah.
And like someone asked me last week, imagine this in the 80s, if we had done joint biological warfare research with the Kremlin.
Yeah.
Can you imagine that ever happening?
Oh my gosh, that is just it's a great way to put it. I mean, for those cold warriors out there, people of a certain age who remember that never would have happened.
Right. Yeah, and so we're digging more and more into that because it's not just Peter Daszak. There's other scientists. What we have been funding in China and partnering with them is stunning, and it just makes you want to put your head underneath the pillows and just stay there forever.
That's amazing. Well, you have to read about it over at Red State. Jen Van Laar, thank you so much for coming on the Adult in the Room podcast. I really appreciate your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Adult in the Room podcast. To keep the programs you like to listen to, please rate this podcast with a fantastic 5 stars on your Apple Podcast app every time you listen, and give me a great review. Plus, of course, subscribe to the podcast. It makes a difference with the big tech algorithm and the big tech oligarchs, and it makes us easier to find. Please get in touch with me on all the big tech stuff. Yeah, we're still there. Using the names Victoria Taft or the Adult in the Room podcast on MeWe, Parler, Minds, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Thanks to 1ACast for imaging, editing, and production. The fantastic song is Gospel by the March 4th Band of Portland, Oregon. Music for Antifa versus Mike Strickland is Ride or Die by Raps by RC. The Adult in the Room podcast is also a production of Flamingo Road Studios. Remember, head up, heart out, and strive to be the adult in the room. Till next time, mischief managed.